we reviewed our internal process for licensing, inspection, and investigations. Naturally, this led me to a lot of questions, which is something I promised all of you that I would have, and I promised this team that I would have. Why we do certain things, and then really that big, crazy goal of what can we do to eliminate duplication and or even steps within that process. So we're really at this point are just at that surface. We've identified all of those steps. As an outsider set of eyes looking in at that, I have already seen a couple of areas where we're duplicating. But we've got to ask our subject matter experts if there's a reason why we're duplicating. So that's our next steps in this adventure, is pulling together the entire compliance team, which is going to happen later this month, and we're going to peel back that next layer of the onion. It's important to me that we bring those subject matter experts to the table to drive that process improvement work, because they themselves are the ones who are actually doing it. So it doesn't make sense for me to sit in my office at the state capitol when they're the ones who are in our salons and barbers doing that work. So I look forward to continuing to share updates with you about our process mapping each month. So this leads me to provisional licensing. I'm guessing you may have noticed that utilizing data is paramount to my leadership, decision making, and overall business operations. Although I have only been here 5 weeks, believe it or not, this team has been extremely gracious in listening to me drone on and on about data and how it can help our business. So much so that I do have some individuals who are now coming to me and with questions and ideas related to data, which is amazing. It's an awesome transformation to watch. As an example, the day after our April board meeting, so I think we met on Friday the 8th, and so whatever that Monday was, Ms. Susie came to me because she had identified with data a significant number of provisional licenses in the queue waiting to be processed. Jointly, we took a deep dive into the issues and identified the root cause of that license, of why the licensing couldn't be processed timely. And I'm sure it'll be a surprise to you because she's been answering phones. She's unable to timely process those licenses because she has been helping out and answering our inbound phone calls, which is great because she wants to help out. Everybody's a team player. But now we're creating a backlog of professional licenses. So we made some decisions related to the work and began tracking her data on a daily basis. After 4 weeks of tracking that data, so starting that Monday through last Friday, and Susie, I think she answered the phones like a day and a half, ended up answering the phones a day and a half out of that, I can now share with you some pretty amazing data. So in those 4 weeks, so just the 4 weeks, 445 provisional licenses were issued. The downside to that is we received 313 new provisional license requests. So that really resulted only in a net reduction of our overall provisional licenses in queue of 73. Currently, those requests date back to March 16th. So that's also something that, so we're talking about, we've been talking about timeliness and our desire to get there, so we're starting to try to understand that. Sadly, the way our IT systems are currently structured, this is something that we are manually doing on a day-to-day basis. I will say, though, when we started tracking those requests, they did date back to January 29th. So we're making some progress. But I can also tell you that staying on that same trajectory, and again, it's averages, so we can look at daily totals and some of those types of things and massage the numbers, but staying on that same trajectory, it's going to take Susie 98 days to completely eliminate that queue at those numbers. Okay. This, of course, assumes we continue to accept provisional license requests, and I have more on that later. When we stop accepting new provisional license requests, though, she can fully address all of those provisional licenses in queue in less than 22 days. So, like, we, again, just having it, which for her was huge, just being able to see, yes, we've got this backlog, but now we can actually plan for the future and how to address some of those items. We have also started similar tracking of salon licensing and reciprocity licensing. So this leads me to testing and scheduling updates. I know there were a number of emails going back and forth last week And I understand that I may have caused some confusion in last month's report related to testing data with our testing partner. And so I want to clarify a few of those details this month, as I understand it, right? So I'm not outsider looking in, and I will say that this has been a pretty significant education just to wrap my arms around licensing, or excuse me, testing and scheduling. In December of 2021, the board voted to switch to written practical examination. At that time, our testing partner continued to test weekly with a queue of approximately 1,500 to 1,600 candidates with additional approvals coming in every day. It's important to note that although the board voted in December that we did not have a signed agreement with our partner until March 23rd of 2022. So there were 3 full months between the board decision and the agreement with the testing partner. So as a result of the December board decision and a newly executed agreement in late March, our partner stopped scheduling the cosmetology, esthetician, and nail techs on March 29th. And those candidates were converted to the written practical examination queue. At that time, approximately 1,500 candidates were converted. Since that time, though, an additional 800 candidates have been added to the queue, bringing our total candidates waiting for testing to approximately 2,300. Okay, so just one, because I know we've had a couple of numbers running around there. I want to be clear that as of, it was Wednesday last week, we were at 2,300. The remaining candidates are hairstylist instructors who cannot test at this time by way of CBT. It could not be converted to the written practical examination, I should say, have been scheduled to test hands-on as follows. So in April, 12 instructors and 60 hairstylists were scheduled. In May, 13 instructors and 46 hairstylists have been scheduled. And in June, 10 instructors and 20 hairstylists are currently scheduled. So that's a total of 161 that have scheduled to test for instructors and hairstylists. And that continues as those approvals come in, the testing partner contacts them and schedules them. And at this point, they're scheduling in June. And they expect that they should be, you know, if we have, I mean, it's May, we're going to have more graduations, that they can schedule approximately 30 to 35 more in the month of June should those individuals want to do that. Our testing partner has moved up the launch of that CBT testing to May 23rd, which is 2 weeks ahead of the original schedule that was developed after the agreement was signed. Beginning immediately on May 23rd, they will begin testing the approximately 2,300 candidates that are in the queue and any new candidates that come in. So all of our new graduates that are happening this week, next week, and the week after. They will be scheduled at 1 of 8 locations in the state, 5 to 7 days a week, with 25 seats in each session. Back of the napkin math indicates that those waiting in the queue could be addressed as quickly as 11 days. Could be. Okay. That said, our partner believes with that kind of numbers, it'll be probably 6 to 8 weeks. Okay. So that's important. Write that one down. 6 to 8 weeks to get all of those candidates tested. Of course, this is contingent upon candidates scheduling, showing up for their test, and passing. I have requested monthly data updates from our testing partner, and I've asked for it in a dashboard so that I can see it real time. We'll see if that might be pushing it just a little bit too far at this point. But they have agreed to monthly data in advance of the board meeting. So I should have pretty consistent numbers for you over the next couple of months. I will be tracking the number of individuals tested against our starting number of approximately 2,300. Of course, that was our number as of the end of Wednesday last week. I know we have more graduations. We'll have more graduations, so that number is probably going to go up a couple hundred more. But I'm feeling very comfortable with where we're at with our testing partner. So this leads me to provisional licensing, which seems to be the topic of at least my 5 weeks of being here. And to be perfectly candid, provisional licensing is really tricky. The decision-making around this was made many, many months before my arrival, and wrapping my arms around this issue has been a whole education in itself. I understand that we have no statutory, regulatory, or executive authority, meaning no executive order from the governor, to issue this type of license in 2022. And my fear is that this exposes our organization to significant risk. For example, if a citizen in our state gets their hair permed this week and their scalp gets a chemical burn, and they learn that that individual who provided this service is on a provisional license and has not been tested, we've opened ourselves up to pretty significant risk of litigation. Additionally, not to be selfish, it does open myself, licensing staff, and board members being named in that litigation. So as you can tell, this is a tricky situation and I'm very concerned about it. In the November board meeting, the board motion voted and passed unanimously to the following motion, and I quote, to continue to provide provisional licenses to student graduates until the wait time for required testing is down to 3 months. That's what was motioned. I listened to the tapes. I read the minutes. That's what was decided. As I previously mentioned, the CBT testing will begin on May 23rd, and students can schedule their testing 5 to 7 days a week at one of 8 locations with 25 seats in each session. Back to my back of the napkin math, that would indicate that our testing partner has the capacity to test 1,000 candidates per week based on a 5-day work week. Though they have some of those 8 locations are open 7 days a week. So I went with the lower number. But with that capacity, it is clear they can address all existing candidates in the queue and any new graduates in less than 3 months. To that end, I have instructed our licensing team to stop accepting new provisional license requests at the close of business Friday, May 20th. We will process the remaining provisional license applications that are in the queue, which is about 450, actually it's 481 this morning. We had a whole bunch come in over the weekend. So we're at 481. We will also extend any current provisional license holder that with a May 31st, 2022 expiration date to June 30th. Because the 23rd to the 31st of May is a handful of days and we can't guarantee that testing. Based on this data, I am confident that we are well under that 3-month mark. I will continue to work with my team and our testing partner to track this data to ensure if there is any slippage in that timeline, meaning we're going to be greater than the 3 months, that we will immediately problem solve and determine what steps we need to take to ensure our testing timeline remains under 3 months. And currently, my long-term goal is that we get that to like 21 to 28 business days. But we've got some work to do before we can get there. That takes me to rulemaking. I'm almost done, I promise. Staff is meeting weekly to go through a section of rules to determine where there is duplication between cosmetology and barbering. At the direction of the board last month, staff are currently reviewing the fees specifically, and we are using a data-driven approach to determine if fees are correct or need to be updated to reflect the true cost of doing business. For example, an initial license for a barber is $40, and for a cosmetologist, it's $60. So we are researching the number of licenses that are issued and have been issued over the last 3 years to determine what the right dollar amount is. Because we had this lengthy discussion, and we're like, well, let's just make it $50. But we're like, what if our true cost is actually $58? So let's really determine what our costs are. I don't think we're expecting any increases in fees as a result of doing this work, but we are going to be very data-driven in how we establish those fees for moving forward. And again, with the desire of it being budget neutral, so we're not making money, but that we're also not losing money because we're not in a situation to do either of those things. I have asked our project manager, who I read in the minutes was introduced to you all, I believe in May, Ray, or March, Ray, who to begin establishing our plan to determine the exact length of time this project will take. This plan will include our rules committee meetings that we're going to talk about next month, I believe, Brandy. And the implementation of the feedback that we received as a result of those meetings. So stay tuned. I'm hoping, but my plan that Ray and I talked about was that I'd be able to present something to the board from a planning standpoint in June. To close on that topic, On behalf of our organization, Jeannie Hahn, who is a contractor for us, submitted a notice of recodification to the Arizona Secretary of State's office on April 27th. This action simply combines the barbering and cosmetology rules into one chapter. Okay? So there were two separate chapters previously. We're bringing all of the rules into one chapter. So there's been no elimination of rules and no new rules have been written. But this is a crucial step that we must take in that long-term process of rulemaking. So I could throw out a number for you that I think for how long it's going to take us to do this, but I don't think that's fair because we don't actually have a plan at this point to determine what that looks like. I've got it up here, but we're just trying to, I want to make sure that we can document what we're doing, when we're doing it, and how we're going to do it. Okay, almost done. Our next meeting will be Friday, June 17th at 9 a.m. I believe it's in this room because the game is apparently under construction as of this morning. unfortunately, I am not available in person that day due to a commitment I've had on the books for like 7 months at this point, but I will be joining you virtually to provide you a similar update next month and to listen to all of the great things happening at the board meeting. So that leads me to my final category, and I was actually thinking about this over the weekend. I obviously, my first board meeting as the executive director with you all was my fifth day on the job, and I really processed, it took a lot of time that week and or the week after and processed just that meeting, how it's operating, what we can do as staff to make things more efficient. Also what the board and how we can conduct business at the board level can impact the efficiency of staff work on the back end due to decisions made here. And we did identify two areas that could be improved upon pretty quickly within these meetings. So I'm going to ask Assistant Attorney General Baskin to provide board members with some quick training on a redrafted informal interview script. And secondarily to that, some language around your motions for the acceptance of staff recommendation, because we think if we can adjust the wording of that, it actually eliminates one or two steps, I think, in staff process that just makes everything just that much more efficient. So I'm going to turn it over to Assistant Attorney General Baskin, and then we will move on to board business.
Good morning, Mr. Bagley, members of the board. It has been great to work with Mr. McCauley and also your wonderful staff as we move forward with this consolidation of the boards. And what we thought we would do is just, I could do some very brief training on the script for the informal interview process just to give everybody a background. I want to just first off and tell you that we have the former barber board statutes regarding informal interviews and also the cosmetology form statutes. Because of the consolidation, they've all been blended. But luckily, in this one area, they are the same. There's only one minor difference, and that is once a matter moves forward past the informal interview stage, we're going forward to a formal hearing by issuing a complaint. What the cosmetology board has is we have the ability to file a motion to deem allegations admitted, which we're able to move forward in a default proceeding. If we never hear from the licensee after providing them due process notice, and what the board does is we not only give them due process notice, the board always takes extra steps to try to contact them by every known address that they may have, also electronically. And then we even wait, instead of the 36 days, we even wait a couple more days, sometimes 10, 15 days, just to see if we can get that individual to come forward. The barber board does not have the ability to initiate the default proceedings. So in the event that we have individuals that do not contact the board will be going through formal hearings on all disciplinary matters. And is that's correct, Mr. Green? Okay. All right, so that's just one thing. But as far as the interview, the informal interview, as far as this whole area, they are the same. So what you have here is you have just a short page. It's suggested timeline about how long this should take. And then there's a little bit of, this is what I call the short one. The long one is really long because that outlines the motion, but I think that this board is able to function pretty well in that area. So I'm just going to go very briefly through this. The first three sections are sections 1, 2, and 3 that only have to be done once. As far as the informal interview opening remarks by the board chair, you will see that those are very, very short. It's the date and the time. And what it does is it lets the licensees know that the board has received all the information, and it really helps narrow the focus of that informal interview so they don't have to maybe restate things that they've already stated that it would be in there, but they could add any additional comments or they could respond to statements made by the board staff. So that is to just let them know, this is what we've done, this is where you need to go. Then number 2 is a very quick swear-in of the board staff, and then the next part is the general introduction to licensees, and that's number 3, and that provides the licensees to another statement regarding what are the options of the board in this official disciplinary proceeding. And as you all know, I think we talked about it last month, there's the non-disciplinary options, which are dismissal, non-disciplinary letter of concern, and I'm going to get to those motions later, but if there is a motion for a non-disciplinary letter of concern, this is later on, but I'll just broach it now, is we need to know the reason, what would be the concern of the board. As far as discipline, again, this is another area where both the Barber Board and the Cosmetology Board are on the same page, and that would be to issue a disciplinary letter of concern, issue a probation, which was done last month, offer a consent agreement with terms previously offered or new terms, or forward the matter to a formal hearing with no offer of a consent agreement. So those would be what the options that the board would have. Now, as far as timeline, that should take maybe 5 minutes at the most. Then turning on to the actual informal interview proceeding, and this is for each scheduled case. And you will see that on the longer script, what's going to happen is this is going to be where the board chair is going to open up each case and state the name of the licensee and the case number. At that point, you're going to have the licensee, and if they're represented by counsel, come forward and state their name for the record. You're going to swear in the licensee and any witnesses that they may have. And then the board staff will present their investigative report for the board and give a brief summary of the case. Board staff will now be providing testimony pursuant to standing up at the podium so that they are able to focus. They'll have the licensee at the table. They will provide a brief summary of the case, which should be, 5 minutes. After that, the board would go ahead and question the staff to see if they've had any other clarifications regarding the investigative report. Many times there are pictures that are included in that investigative report. So at that time, all of the evidence from the state would be presented from the board to review. After that, after any questioning by the board, then it would be turning it over to the licensee and or licensee's attorney. They would, again, be given a 5-minute amount of time to make a statement. The way other boards, and Mr. McGaughey and I have talked about how we're really going to enforce that, and it's a guideline. It's a suggested guideline. One thing that we were considering is when we do approach that 5-minute mark, then Mr. McGaughey or board staff would say, we're reaching the 5 minutes. Maybe they could wrap up their statements. But again, if it's a very complicated case and more time needs to be had in discussion and questioning. So then after the licensee makes their statements, then it's the opportunity for the board. This is your chance as board members to question the licensee, question the licensee's attorney. You may have another follow-up question for board staff. Board staff will be ready to answer those questions and have done a lot of preparation prior to coming here today to be succinct and very concise in their presentation. And then after that, this is the time when testimony is taken. So it's the point in, let's say we're talking about a trial. It's after, let's say a criminal trial, it's after the state rests and the defense rests. So all the evidence is in. Then we move to the deliberation phase. So this is like the jury has it. But in this case, you, the board members, you all serve a function as being, as making, you are all a group making the decision, and you are functioning as quasi-judicial officers. And in that role, that's a role of independence and autonomy. And during the deliberations, there is no discussion, there's no interruptions from the licensee. If that happens, then at that time, it would be tell the individual this is the time for the board to go ahead and have their discussion. There's some suggested language in there that basically says that that the board will now discuss the case, deliberate, and decide what action to take, either disciplinary or non-disciplinary. Please do not interrupt the board's discussion or deliberation. So that's really important to have that time for the board to discuss the matter. As far as resolving complaints, licensees are entitled for the board to make decisions made solely on the facts and solely on the evidence presented through, you know, the complaint, an expert, if we ever come to that, through documents, through photographs. And I just want to have, this is just my little mini opportunity to state that the board needs to maintain their independence and autonomy. And not all the information that you have and testimony and documents are what every other board member has. And board members should not, as judges should not, go out and gather additional information. And I'll go ahead and give you the example. Mr. Turnstein has probably heard this in law school. The situation where I forget the case, but maybe you will remember it, where a judge was a sitting judge in a personal injury case and decided that, you know, this is, you know, there's some questions about what was happening at the intersection, what it looked like. So a judge went out and went actually to look at where the accident happened. And later on appeal, the judge was disqualified because he or she went out and did their own investigation. So just like the board would never do their own investigation. Now, oftentimes, licensees will reach out to board members and have questions. And, you know, all licensees are potential respondents in cases before the board. So what the board members need to do in my time here, they've always done that, have referred those cases to the executive director and just provide information and state, you know, I am on the board. It's not that I don't want to help you, but you need to go directly to the executive director, in this case, Mr. McCauley, provide his contact information and have that information, have their questions answered, because the board staff is in the best position to be able to answer those questions. Mr. McCauley, do you want to add anything to that? No, I'm sorry. All right, and then moving on, after deliberation, then we're going to move on to board motions. And at this time, the board has two options, disciplinary and non-disciplinary. If there is non-disciplinary, there does not need to be a motion for findings of facts and conclusions of law. And through your board discussions, it's going to be evident which direction the board wants to go. And again, this is the board's decision. If you move to dismiss or issue that non-disciplinary letter of concern, that would be a motion. Again, on the non-disciplinary letter of concern, it would be please include the reason. It would be to, you know, comply with the health and safety standards to ensure that all of the licensees working within the salon post their licenses, whatever it is. Now, if it does move into the disciplinary phase, we would have to, the board is going to have to make a motion. The first motion would be to adopt the findings of facts and conclusions of law as stated in the investigative report. Now, let's say the board decides that we only find one of the violations, two. Let's say there's licensing, and let's say something new comes to light, and there's new evidence. So the board doesn't find licensing, but they do find sanitation. The board can, they can only withdraw the allegations. You cannot add to them. If the board finds other things in the case, you can't add those on. You could continue it and have the licensee be noticed, but pursuant to due process, you can't have anything. So
because the licensee wouldn't have had an opportunity to defend.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what they're given is they are given a written notice of what the charges are or what the allegations are so that they can go ahead and defend. And they're also being told what are the disciplinary options. So, Mr. Chair, when you read those, you are refreshing your recollection. They are being told this in writing. I'm sure they've been told this by board staff, but again, it's to be putting it on the record. So no additional allegations can be added, but certainly the board has the discretion. Now, if the board wants to withdraw one of the allegations, or you don't find that there's sufficient evidence, then we would need two motions. We would need a motion to find the facts, and I'm going to give you the same hypothetical that I've given you. So it would be a motion, I would say, you know, Mona Baskin is making the motion to adopt the findings of facts within the investigative report relating to sanitation violations. And then there would be a second, then there would be a vote on that. And then as far as we have to have another motion for conclusion of law. If Mr. Turrentine would make a motion, he would say, I make a motion to adopt the conclusions of law containing the investigative report related to sanitation. Then there would be a vote on that. And then the board would go to the second part of that board decision making. So now we have the framework. We have what is the conduct and what are the violations. Now the second part of that is what are our disciplinary options. And those are a disciplinary letter of concern, and that's probably the lowest level. Offer a consent agreement. And remember, the consent agreement could include future inspection, taking of the class, and restitution to one of the patrons. It does not include a civil penalty. So if the board wishes to impose a civil penalty, then what you would have to do is offer a consent agreement. And this is as far as including civil penalty in one of the disciplinary options for informal interviews. That is something that many other boards do have, so that we can kind of shorten up the process and not go through these other steps. And certainly that is something that can be looked at in the future. So once we have the board motion for resolution of the case, then there's the conclusion. And the conclusion is very simply, and it's telling the licensee, because at this point, you know, this is a new process to them, hopefully. They haven't been here before, but let them know that they can contact board staff. Now, getting back to the disciplinary action, if the board makes a determination to impose discipline and adopts the findings of fact and conclusions of law, at that time, the board chair is going to ask, does the licensee have any prior history with the board? At that time, you can hear if the licensee has prior history. So why is that? Why are we telling you at this time? Because prior history is not relevant to the facts that are before the board. It's not. You can't use the fact that maybe one time in the past, an individual was found in violation of a discipline to prove the conduct before you. You have to just look at the four corners of the evidence before you to make that determination. But it is highly relevant to the board's decision regarding discipline because of the concept of aggressive discipline. What that means is, let's say you find sanitation violations, okay? And let's say they're pretty egregious. Let's say one week ask board staff, is there any prior discipline? Let's say 18 months prior to this, they had a consent agreement for very similar sanitation violations. But this time, and the board is going to know what the outcome of that was. The board is going to say, okay, we only tried once to get your attention. It didn't work. So the board could, in your discretion and autonomy, make the decision based on that, what can we do to remediate this licensee? We this the whole time. We want to pull people into compliance and remediate so that the conduct doesn't happen.
Just to clarify, so the past violations, I mean, we don't hear about those until we've made a decision about the validity of the matter in front of us, and then we hear about it in terms of or when we do the disciplinary.
Yes, yes.
But not before that, right?
That's correct. That's
okay.
Correct. That would not be alleged, and
good.
We would want you to look at the cell phone or the complaint in front of you.
Got
because
it.
Prior act evidence cannot be proven to not be used to prove conformity within. That's the rule of evidence. However, I know that the rule of evidence don't loosely apply, but that tenet does.
Good,
that's yes, that is absolutely well. Yes, that's the way. That's the best way to proceed. Then after that, let's say that there's some of these informal interviews. People have been noticed. They've been contacted, and again, the board not only sends them the information, they contact them. Yes. Many times there is multiple opportunities. So the board staff does wonderful customer service to answer questions to make sure that people come forward. So we do have some recommended language, and I would really ask that the board, you know, either memorize or just use this as a cheat sheet. But the motion would be to move case number, whatever it is, to a formal hearing or in the alternative, accept the signed consent agreement previously offered by the board as resolution of the case. And the reason why we really need to stick to that language, because it saves steps. As Mr. McAuley pointed out, the whole purpose is to streamline the process. So let's say, I'm going to give you another hypothetical, the individual doesn't show up for the informal interview. And they had decided early on, you know, I want a formal hearing, and they change their mind. And they say, and I will tell you, once a matter is moved to formal hearing, then it goes to Ms. Rodriguez, who makes many phone calls, sends many reminder letters, but in the event that they say, you know what, I really thought about it, I'm going to take a civil penalty, you know, I've given it some thought. In those cases, then if the complaint has not been issued, then in those cases, what we would do is we would just accept the signed consent agreement and the matter would be resolved. Now, if indeed a complaint has been issued, and then I'm involved in that at that point, if a complaint has been issued and they sign a signed consent agreement, we do have that matter has to be brought to the board because we have an active complaint sitting out. And at that point, it needs to be brought back to the board so that the board can know that the licensee signed a consent agreement as per this motion, and then the state can withdraw control. So just to clean it up. So that language is very important. Now, there's also some other language to be used with the consent agenda. And as you all know, with the consent agenda, you can pull a case. If there is a case that's on the consent agenda, the board, and the board has questions about it, a board member can go ahead and pull a case. If there aren't, or if you can pull a case, it will be considered separately. But if you want to adopt a staff recommendation, these are under 9. These are three separate motions that are recommended language. So for dismissal, it would be adopt staff recommendation for dismissal based on the board's parameters. And just to take a pause here and let you know that the board has parameters on how they resolve matters and how staff presents those cases. So these are very distinct black and white. If this conduct, this is how much a civil penalty. So there should be no discretion. And then when the board goes ahead and looks at those, you would have a second pair of eyes and make a decision on what to do. But just to let you know, Mr. McGaughan, you want to add anything to that? Or Mike? Okay. All right. Okay. So then the next motion would be to adopt the staff recommendations for issuing a non-disciplinary letter of concern, again, based on the board's parameters. The board's parameters contain some areas where the board has found that these may be issues. There are concerns. We don't want to see it continuing, but we want to give the licensee a letter of concern. so that they can remediate the state safety parameters and not have any other issues. And then finally, there would be the third one is to adopt staff recommendations for offering a consent agreement based on the board's parameters and if not accepted, proceed to an informal interview. And what this is really specific language, and I know Mr. McCauley will be reminding if there's any general reminders on this or I could jump in. But what this allows board staff to do is offer a consent agreement, and if those cases are resolved, they don't need to come back to the board. You don't need to be getting the whole list of cases. This is negotiated, this is negotiated. Those cases are done, they're complete based on this motion. Now, in the 11th hour, we know that many cases are resolved on going forward with the courtroom staff. They're resolved right before, and those we would have to be, you know, the board staff, when we go through that section of the agenda, would be advising the board and say, you know, this one has accepted the consent agreement, so then those would be within the board's consideration. But hopefully, the script and then the suggested guidelines are ways to keep the board, you know, to be able to move through the informal interview, but also to maintain a really clear record in the event that these cases would be appealed to the Superior Court and on to the Court of Appeals, and also to make sure that the licensees are really aware of what the parameters are. And then again, as Mr. McCauley said, we just want to be able to be efficient and not redundant in what and how the board processes these cases. So.
I think the intent was under a process that last meeting, but we can adjust motion language that then allows staff to just go and do based on the existing parameters that you have approved rather than having to wait a month and have to come back before the board again. So I think it really helps narrow the focus of the board meeting and getting down to just the key things that the board business needs to occur. And of course, we're going to start tracking these things. Recognizing that, last month we had two informal interviews. This month we have as many as 24, and the two last months are an hour and a half. So we're just kind of narrowing, making sure we stay, within our parameters, getting through cases, allowing the licensee to be able to just speak and have their case heard, and the board make good to have each every month.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Mara, what is the difference between without negotiation options or with negotiation options in an informal interview?
Well, some of them are cases where, as far as the parameters, there are some cases that board staff may review and say, you know what, they don't fit into any of these categories. We are unsure. And they're always going to defer on providing that licensee the opportunity to come in and speak to the board. Have the board to have the case. So they will apply these very, very strictly. And if it doesn't fall in, again, it would come to the board for that. So that
we have negotiation options.
Well, the ones with negotiation options are if they fall within the board's parameters. But if there's any, that there's any question about whether or not they do or not, they want those to come to the hands of the board directly for the board to make the decision.
Mr. Chair, member. If you look at your today's agenda, if you go to step two, you've got A without, and so that's the board's going to have to make a determination in that case because it doesn't fit within the parameters.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
And just to put the discretion within the board, not within the staff. So if there's any issues like that, then it would be brought to the board. And just on the ancillary issue, your executive director has a statutory authority to issue licenses. But even in the same arena, as far as issuing licenses, if there's any question, Mr. McCauley is going to bring you any that is not completely squeaky clean. Going to put that before the board because those are the cases, those are the licensing decisions and the regulatory decisions that fall solely within the board and doesn't need to be brought to the board for resolution. So that was a really good question. I know that was long. I didn't find that help.
Do you have another copy of that document?
Everybody should read that.
There was everybody's copy.
Not mine. Be helpful to have one.
One for you.
Okay.
One for sure.
Mr. Chairman, my quote-unquote section of the agenda. And since we're an hour in, I would recommend maybe we address the consent agenda items, take a quick 5-minute break, and then go into our informal.
Sure. We also have current events that we haven't touched. So, next item up is summary of current events that affect the Arizona State Board of Cosmetology, which is a wording change we need to get fixed. Because, as I recall, we have a bunch of new friends. So, let's fix that. So, events that affect the Arizona State Barbering and Cosmetology Board. Do you have any information there that we need to discuss?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I do not have anything specific. The only item was which I mentioned in my report, was related to public information requests that went to the legislature, and the governor signed about 2 weeks ago now. And we're going to, because the bill is now been here 2 hours and 7 minutes, we will dig into that. Basically, it says we have 5 days to confirm receipt of the public information request. And my intention with that is we will confirm receipt and then tell them the timeline that it will take for the request to issue that request. And that's actually what I have done with the couple that we've received since I've been here, and it seems to be working well, but I can't. It's not necessarily an executive director role, so that
sure.
will be something we put on our public information officer.
That's perfect. Good to have that come under control.
Yes.
All right, so let's move into the consent agenda and move through the easy parts. So is that Joe Rosa or is that someone else? Okay, Rosa, would you do the 1A and B and C?
Step 1A, recommended application denial, we have none. Step 1B, recommended dismissal. Chairman, members of the board, all cases under Step 1B, recommended dismissals, have been reviewed according to the board's parameters, and we would ask the board to consider staff recommendations or take other non-disciplinary action.
Do any board discussion or consideration? Hearing none, I accept the motion.
I'll make a motion to adopt staff recommendations for dismissal based on the board's parameters.
Second.
Okay, roll call. Mr. Bailey?
Yes.
Ms. Flores?
Aye.
Ms. Vaughn Glover?
Aye.
Mr. Knox?
Aye.
And Mr. Turnbine?
Yes.
Step 1C, non-disciplinary concern. Mr. Chairman, is under support. All cases under Step 1C, recommended non-disciplinary concern, have been reviewed according to board standards.
Any discussion from the board? I accept the motion.
I move that we adopt staff recommendations for issuing a non-disciplinary letter of concern based on the board's directives.
I second.
Okay.
Roll call. Mr. Bailey?
Yes.
Ms. Flores?
Aye.
Ms. Vaughn Glover?
Aye.
Mr. Knox?
Aye.
And Mr. Turnbine?
Yay.
Step 1B, recommended employment union or negotiation terms. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, all cases under Step 1B, recommended informal union or negotiation terms have been reviewed according to board's parameters, and we ask the board to consider staff recommendations and take other non-disciplinary action.
Any discussion from the board? Any inquiries about any of these cases?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. On this section D, we don't have the description of what the basic summary is, like we do in the others.
Staff recommendations.
I think it would regret, right?
Yeah. So it's not on the agenda like the other. How, why is that?
Mr. Chair, Member Flores, I think this is a situation where that's the way it has been, but we are certainly happy to look at how we can improve
easier
that.
Easier for us if we could review.
Yeah, and I actually, one of the things I identified in going through this, so I wasn't here for board prep in April, so one of the things that I did, we the compliance team met, one of the things actually post that meeting that I looked at is actually almost putting this section in more of like a spreadsheet format, so that we have our case number, we've got all of those things, and the appropriate staff recommendation that follows that. I do know that staff emailed out on, I mean, it was Wednesday or Thursday, but they did send that to everybody, and it has the agenda, and then a comment on track
right.
changes
right.
That says what that staff recommendation is. But we're certainly open to improving, and it was something I had already identified as something I could look at doing a little bit differently.
Yeah, the more opportunity we had to review the data to make sure we have them straight, because even though we looked at these a week ago, it's a week ago.
Correct.
So
I completely agree. And we'll look at that and figure that out.
Okay.
And like our goal for the June meeting, although very lofty, our goal is to actually have a full set of materials 1 week prior to the meeting, so that we don't have, so that you can have a little more time to that stuff.
Yeah.
Just getting to the meeting and going through it.
But it didn't even occur to me, but it's not even like numerically ordered in that Google Drive, so you know, finding it to review again, order a little bit.
Yes. And Mr. Chairman, the spreadsheet idea is fine. I think that's great. It gives more information. But like, we did also used to have, I don't know when it fell off, but it used to say like $500 consent agreement.
And you're talking about the staff recommendations.
Yeah.
That was sent to you. And Daria, it is in the package. It's for staff recommendations.
We agree.
Right. It's just not in the agenda where it used to be. On this right-hand column where you see, for example, there's a case and it tells the name and the number and it says inactive personal license in parentheses. And it used to have that for step 1D as well, and they're no longer there. That's all I'm talking about.
So we'll look at what our options are for getting it to you and making it.
We want to be fair.
Yeah.
And also making sure that we don't have any legal issues with that being associated on the agenda. But I hear you, Brandy, and making it a little more.
Yeah, we want to be fair to everybody. I don't want to think I remember that one in some way.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'm also on board staff recommendations. I don't see this here.
Are you going to follow this down to the
two separate agendas. There's two separate ones. There's one that says board staff recommendations, and the other one's just a regular.
Chairman, would this be maybe a time that we want to take a break so that we can find that for you?
Yes, that would be great.
And you can take a look at that so that before you guys vote,
we'll be able
to find that. So why don't we, Mr. Chair, I'll defer to you on length of break, and this is our opportunity, and then we can get into informal interviews after that. So it's 10:15 now.
All right, so I don't know how I was going to get that organized. So let's take a 15-minute break. We'll start again at 10:30 and run through this for the basis and get cleaned up. All right.
Thank
Thank you. I Thank you. I